KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akkwan. The Tlene D have stewarded this area for thousands of years. The tidelands where our studios sit are now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. But they were once a source of food and a place to maintain smokehouses and a place to gather driftwood for fuel. In sharing this history, KTOO hopes to honor the ancestors and the descendants of the Akkwan. We recognize those families who have never relinquished their ownership and stewardship of their land and waterways and continue to cherish and depend upon their immediate connection to the waterfront for today and for future generations. We'd like to take a moment to say thank you to the individuals who helped us craft our daily land acknowledgement. Gunashchish to Vera Starbird, who planted the idea of making it super place-specific and guided us on pronunciation. Lillian Peter Shore, who created so much of the beautiful structure. Ishmael Hope, who gave additional ideas, and Ernestine Hayes, Bob Sam, and Fran Houston, who gave important feedback. We are grateful to all those offering guidance as we grow as an organization. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. Hospitals have coined the term for this patient and family engagement, patient-centered care, all ways of saying that families are important to a patient's recovery. In fact, the research shows that one of the best things hospitals can do to speed up the healing process is partner with a patient's family. Joining us now to tell us more about Bartlett's plans to embrace this concept, Autumn Muse, Bartlett's patient and family engagement coordinator, and also a nurse. Hi, Autumn.
Hi, Shelley.
Let's start with some background. As I kind of said already, the term patient and family engagement is not just buzzwords. It refers to a scientific-based approach. Can you tell me more about what that means?
Yeah, so there's research. There's actually been a bit of research that has looked at how we can help support patients in the hospital and ensuring that they feel comfortable with their care and help them with their healing process. And so the research had looked at when patients are more familiar with what's going on and are involved in their, you know, their day-to-day plan of care when they're in the hospital, and when families are involved and have the opportunity to ask questions, that we have found that patients heal faster and get out of our hospitals faster. And also it helps relieve that, you know, anxiety that we all have when we're not feeling well and we're in the hospital.
So how has Bartlett adopted this approach and applied it to patient care? Do you have any examples you could share?
I actually have a lot of examples. So this kind of initiative went out. It's been around for a while, since about 2012. And so one of the big things that Bartlett does is our mission is, you know, ensuring that we're providing patient-centered care, safe patient-centered care. So communication is always an important thing to always be improving on. And so we've done a handful of things to ensure that our communication with patients and families is improving and is continuing to improve. And so our doctors each day, they do rounds on patients. So they go into the patient's rooms, talk to them. If family's there, they also talk to them, give an opportunity for patients and families to ask questions. Our nurses and our CNAs do bed shift rounds. So when their shift change, our nurses work on most of the floors, work 12 hours, so a day shift and a night shift. And so when they're switching shifts, they go into the patient's room and give their report so that the patient can kind of hear about what went on with their day, what the plan is, if there's any changes, and then give an opportunity for the patient to ask questions. We also have pharmacists with discharge that are for patients who are on high-risk meds, new meds such as meds for maybe diabetes or for preventing clots. They do some education with the patient so they fully understand their medicines before they leave the hospital, and so we can ensure that they have a safe process at home and taking them. Our case management is working with patients even just as soon as they arrive on a mission. There's a checklist that they provide to patients, and it's just getting that conversation started and identifying what will be the needs when they go home so we can ensure that they have a safe transfer back home and avoid coming back to the hospital. So that's kind of some of the communication things that we've done. I have more, but if you have other questions too, Shelley.
Sure. I definitely wanted to ask about what you do as the patient and family engagement coordinator. What's a typical day or week like for you?
So being the coordinator, I'm ensuring that we are keeping this in our mind with what we're doing within the hospital. So if there's new processes that are changing, if there's new policies that are coming out, that we are always thinking about the patient and family and how we can make it best fit them as patients. And how we can communicate that best to patients. With COVID, when things first happened, we really wanted to ensure that our communication about directions on wearing a mask, such as wearing a mask or putting on a mask, was something clear to patients. So we have a patient family advisor that I can speak more on here a little bit later, but we wanted to make sure that with the new changes that were starting with COVID, that we communicated those well to the community and to our patients that come into the hospital. So we made a brochure, we made a flyer, and then also with our bedside shift reporting, we kind of re-implemented that 2 years ago on the departments. We use our patient and family advocate to just ensure what we were doing, meeting what the needs were of the patients.
And what do you enjoy or value about the work that you and your team are doing? It sounds like it could be very fulfilling, but is there anything in particular that motivates you to do this job?
I would say that I think it's so important for us to understand our patients. And why I enjoy it is, I'm here for ensuring that Bartlett is, providing safe care to patients, and that we know that when we engage patients that we're improving their outcomes and making the environment safer. So I feel like understanding that and being a patient myself in the past at Bartlett and within hospitals, that I truly understand where patients are coming when they're anxious about coming to the hospital or being a patient, and how relieving and comforting it is to have that communication with the healthcare team and understand more of what their plan is, what they're doing, and being able to ask questions and feel like I understand what I need to do as a patient and understand what they're doing as a care team. I don't know if that answers that question.
Yeah, of course, of course. And then as a follow-up, I just was wondering, what are some of the challenges? You already have mentioned COVID. Everyone knows that there are some restrictions in hospitals everywhere due to COVID. And you also mentioned there's a patient family advisor who helps you out with your role. So how does that all come together to overcome some of the challenges of the work, just due to the nature of the work, but particularly due to COVID-19?
Yeah. And that's something I wanted to communicate out to the community too, is, we do have limitations with visitors, but that we are always accommodating and looking out for the patient's best interest. And so I encourage, if maybe you can't be in with your family, or if you know you're going to be in the hospital, to ensure that you have a smartphone, you have a tablet, you have, a charger. So if they can't be there in person, at least that you can keep that communication, you can have that FaceTime. So what our patient and family advisor role does is we have a patient who, we have a person who used to be a patient at Bartlett, and kind of understands our processes and what we do at Bartlett. And so if we have something we want to get out to the community, or, for example, the limitations with visitors, how best can we do that to still ensure that the patients and families can be engaged and be involved in their care? And what is the best way to communicate that out in the eyes of the patient? So that patient and family advisor is kind of helps communicate to us as an organization, through the eyes of the patient, how they see it, what should we address and what should we, ensure as a priority for patients.
Does the patient and family engagement approach apply to all patients across the board, or is it mainly targeted to the patients who are in the hospital long term, or would it extend to an outpatient procedure?
That's a great question. I would say that it includes anything within Bartlett, or anything where maybe you're going to an outside area for care. we really want to hear from the patient and have them ask questions and have them be motivated in their care, you know, involved in their care, you know, make goals within their care so they can meet those goals and get out of the hospital. So it could be an outpatient setting too. You know, what are those small goals for, you know, maybe if you're going to come for a surgery or if you're going to our, you know, getting services through our oncology clinic, you know, what are your concerns? We want to know those. How can we make you feel more comfortable with your care?
How do you adapt this approach to patients who don't have any family? And does that come up much?
I mean, I think it does because we definitely, I mean, we have people that come from all over Southeast Alaska, so they may not have family in town. And then, yeah, we do have patients who come in that that don't have family. And I would say we have a pretty amazing team here, you know, a compassionate team that kind of sometimes puts that image of kind of being family for the patient and advocating for the patient. I think that our doctors, our nurses, our CNAs, case management, all of them are really advocate for what the patient needs, what's best for the patient. So I'd say in those cases, you know, if there's something we really feel like would really benefit the patient or a way we can get them more engaged in their care and they don't have family, you know, we ensure that we're communicating with them and advocating for, you know, what we understand, you know, to be the best for them for healing and getting out of the hospital or to address the need that they have.
Do you and your training undergo regular education and training about patient and family engagement? And does that involve everybody at all different levels?
There's definitely a huge discussion on it with our new employees who come into the hospital about that we're all part of the patient experience. It doesn't matter who you are at the hospital. We all play a really key role ensuring that patients are safe at the hospital and that we're part of the patient experience. So it's a big thing that's discussed in the importance of, even if you're coming into the room to clean the room and empty the garbages, that you say hi to the patient, you know, you acknowledge them and be part of that experience. So it's definitely something that we do at the new employee level. And then it's definitely something throughout the year that I talk about. And I really think that this is probably on most all of our staff's mind too, is, you know, we want to get those patients involved. So yeah, definitely at the new level and then throughout the year, it's something that there's different things we do at the hospital where, you know, I remind people like, let's think about the patient, let's get them involved. But I would say overall that our staff, it's a topic that they have on their mind when they take care of patients.
And there's a lot going on at Bartlett. It's been a hard couple of years, the last couple of weeks with the COVID surge, and then now just this past week with sudden changes in management. Your staff has a lot to focus on. How are they holding up? How's morale?
Well, I definitely would say that we all feel very confident in who our interim CEO is, Kathy Callahan. She worked at Bartlett for many years and knows our services and our departments well, and she's well-liked throughout our organization. And really, things haven't changed in the hospital. I mean, our staff come here, work hard day-to-day, and are really focused on providing, you know, safe care and patient-centered care, and that really hasn't changed. I was over in the hospital today, and they're working hard, just focused on patient care. So I haven't really seen a change over there. I think we're a family here and we're all taking care of each other and staying focused to providing good care to the patients and to our community.
How can patients and their families help support you and your colleagues at Bartlett? If someone is planning to come to the hospital, is there anything they can do in advance or while they're there to just make your jobs a little easier?
Yeah, so on our website, under patients and visitors, there's a pre-admission checklist that kind of talks about things to think about and bring with you. So, you know, if you do know you're going to end up in the hospital or you have a loved one in the hospital, that's a great thing to look at to help kind of support us. You know, always advocating. You as a patient, or if it's a loved one in the hospital, you truly know them better than we do. So if there's important information that we need to we need to know and making sure we're providing the best care we can, please communicate that with us. And we always, you know, ask questions, or if you have concerns, share them with us, because we want to make sure that, you know, your experience at Bartlett is, you know, I know that people are sick when they're at Bartlett, but we want them to have a positive experience at Bartlett.
That's a really great sentiment to hear from you, and I know that's very true. Autumn Muse, Bartlett's Patient and Family Engagement Coordinator, thanks for your time today and for coming to tell us more about how families can help their loved ones with their recovery and their stay in the hospital. Is there anything else you want to share with our audience before we say goodbye today?
We're going to have an article in the Winter House Calls more about our initiative and how people who maybe are interested in getting involved as previous patients can outreach me. So I have some more previous patients to get involved if we need that eyes or that vision for through patients' eyes. And I just want to thank you for asking me questions and having me on the show today. It was great to talk with you and great to share this information with the community. So thank you.
It was lovely to talk to you too. It's so nice to be in communication with someone at Bartlett Regional Hospital. I think about you guys every day. So really appreciate the hard work that you're doing day in and day out.
Thank you.
Take care, Autumn. Have a great afternoon.
You too.
From Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juneau with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with 7 cafes and drive-thru locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com. Every mile counts. That's the motto of St. Vincent de Paul for its main fundraiser of the year, its annual walk and run event, which is set for this Saturday. Here to tell us how you can get involved, Dave Ringle, General Manager, St. Vincent de Paul. Hi, Dave.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for coming in today to talk about the Friends of the Poor Run Walk. Before we talk about that, could you just give us a little overview of and remind our listeners about some of the services that St. Vincent de Paul provides to the community?
Well, St. Vincent de Paul is primarily a charity organization aimed at giving services to the neediest. For 17 months of COVID, we ran an emergency warming shelter down at the Jack that no longer works, that no longer is in operation, as the new Glory Hall has opened up next door to us out here in the Valley. But for every person we had in the warming shelter, we had 3 people in low-income housing who otherwise would be homeless. And so we provide a lot of housing. We also offer clothing to people. We offer some emergency food. We have 26 shelter rooms on our Teal Street facility that take people off the street, 13 families and 13 vulnerable individuals. And we also have 75 low-income housing units we do in addition to the food, clothing, and rental assistance and utilities.
That's a lot. It's some heavy lifting that you guys do out there. We love to celebrate successes on Juno Afternoon, and I was wondering if you'd like to share some of the service highlights from 2020.
Well, you know, we combined with the Glory Hall to deliver 480 Thanksgiving baskets. We had 280 children get Christmas gifts through Adopt a Family. We distributed over 1,800 pounds of food. We also have a home visit team that meets people in the community before they become homeless. And we provided over $5,200 in direct aid to them, but also connected them with rental assistance and other programs so that before they got in trouble, they could get the help they needed to stay in their housing.
And I know that you wanted to share the story of the person you lovingly called the woman with the keys.
About a year ago, we worked on one particularly vulnerable person who shouldn't have been in the homeless shelter to start with. And we got her a voucher. We got her into housing. And she calls me frequently because she appreciates it. But about 3 weeks ago, I got a call from her. I didn't answer. And the next call was from her at Anchorage Native Medical Center. She was about to be put in intensive care for COVID. And we hadn't heard from her in 3 weeks. Yesterday, she called us. She's back in Juneau. She's still in the hospital, but she's on the road to recovery. And it was just heartwarming to hear her voice. And she promised she would catch up on her rut. And that's the least of our worries with her. We know she's still alive and she's got a place to come back to.
Right. She's in the picture with the keys. Those are the keys to her home. Yeah.
There's the keys to her new apartment. She had been homeless for over 10 years, and you know, she's going to go back there, which is great to hear. Great to think about.
That is great. I'm so happy to hear that. I'm happy for you guys. Well, as I said, you do a lot. You really do a lot of heavy lifting. I was wondering if you could tell me about some of the ways you support those services.
Well, you know, we have a thrift store, and anybody who buys from our thrift store, after our expenses, all that money goes into our programs. It goes into our housing. It goes into our food aid. We also do fundraisers over the year for our holiday services, which are coming up, and for our aid program. The biggest fundraiser we do is coming up, and that's called the Friends of the Poor Run Walk. It's a national activity in 240 communities over the United States. They're going to be doing an event this weekend. The one here will start with a 5-kilometer run at 9 a.m. It'll start at the thrift store, and it will go out to the airport dike trail about a kilometer and a half and turn around. At 10 o'clock, we'll have a walk that will start at the thrift store, and it will walk through the neighborhood. There'll be a long route around Egan Drive and a short walk, which will go over to our Teal Street facilities, where people will be able to view everything that happens in that small block, where we have 26 shelter units, 31 housing units, a free clothing store, and several other services we provide to people just in the small block right next to the Glory Hall and other buildings back there.
I joke
with Maria Lovechek that she almost doubled the number of services provided in the community by joining us.
So you've been faced with some pretty big challenges over the last year. By that, I mean financial costs such as frozen pipes and broken water heaters and rising insurance rates. How important is participation in this event for helping offset some of those costs?
Well, actually, we had a donor step up who's going to match every dollar that is raised over this fundraiser. And so this money will go into our aid program, but it will also help us to upgrade our things in our shelter for our students so that the fire alarm is up to code and we have to convert from oil hot water heat to electrical and do some work on our siding that is almost done where, you know, if you don't take care of things in Juneau, Alaska, in this harsh climate, the buildings do not last long. And we're well on our way with the matching funds with donations to continue to provide the services we do for several years in the future. And everything that is raised, all the funds that are raised over the next weekend with this fundraiser will go directly to the services we provide, whether it's to help improve our housing or to provide aid for people who need it as we come to the end of the eviction moratorium and we're going to have people facing housing evictions. We're working on trying to help as many people as possible. The needs are great and all the money will be well used.
It's very generous to hear there's a donor who is matching the donations from the community. How long will that be going on?
That will be going on through the end of the year and probably longer. This donor has a long-term commitment to look at the emergency housing we provide to the people who least can afford it and wants to make sure that the buildings are kept up. When I stepped into this job in February 2020, I thought the biggest challenge I would have was about $1.5 million in deferred maintenance that we had to come. I didn't expect COVID to step in and sort of cloud that, but in the middle of COVID, we found we have to address our building issues, and we're doing that slowly. We've got generous support for large projects from the Alaska Mental Health Trust. We have a couple of states that have been very generous, the Rasmussen Foundation, the Juneau Community Foundation, but a lot of the little donors, they're the people that help at holiday times, and they're the people who, even if you don't want to donate a lot, come and see our facility. We're going to have posters out to show what we do and how we can help. And, as volunteers open up, we have a lot of opportunities for volunteers. So it's not just to raise money, it's to show this is all we do and how you can help us out.
Right. Maybe not everybody has the money to donate, but has a little bit of time. Now, I like how the walk this Saturday is going to incorporate sort of a look at the facility. And I'm checking out the background of your Zoom right now. Is that a picture of the facility? And I know you guys just got a new parking lot, too.
Yeah, that's a picture of our new facility with the new parking lot. We've painted the siding that we had to replace half the siding on the building, but the front of the building was good enough that we could save money by painting it and extending its life rather than having to replace it in 5-10 years. So these are the type of projects we're trying to do to make sure that the units there that have been around for 25 years and have housed quite a few people in this community who use it as a way to get out of dire situations. And that's our goal, to help people like that.
I don't know how you got that blue sky in there, though. That must be Photoshop.
It was one of those rare Juneau days that we put up with the 9 months of lousy weather for those 3 months when the sun shines and we realize how beautiful our community and our place is.
Now, I always like how St. Vincent gives some specific examples of what you can get for certain donation amounts, like $25 can equal a sleeping bag and $50, maybe a taxi mm-hmm. pass. Is there a list of those things where we can look at online?
Actually, if you go to svdpjuno.org and you click on events, you will come to the Friends of the Poor Walk event, and we have a list of those on that website. And we also have a registration form if you want to sign up online. And if it's lousy weather and you want to socially isolate, you can donate and do your own socially isolated run, and you're welcome to.
Oh, that's great to hear. Well, thanks for all the wonderful information. And then I did want to ask about the walk run this Saturday. Is there anything folks should know about masking, social distancing, things like that, dogs?
We are going to do everything outside, and we're going to ask for people in a run, you're going to naturally social distance other than when you come to the registration. So we want you to, if you're not feeling well, stay home. If you're feeling well, registering virtually, you can stick with your social bubble, but respect each other's social distance. We're not going to request masks unless you go indoors. And we're going to be respectful of that, especially around the shelter. We've had some cases of COVID, but we've managed to isolate them and keep COVID from spreading. And I hope we continue to do that over the next couple of months as we work towards the end of this next wave of the Delta variant.
Definitely. Well, Dave Ringel, General Manager of St. Vincent de Paul, I hope you have a great turnout this Saturday. Thank you so much for your time and for sharing all that information. Is there anything else you want to say to our audience before we sign off today?
Well, I appreciate the support of the community. This is a unique position. Sometimes I see how much people in our community struggle, but I also see how generous members of our community are, and I greatly appreciate that.
Well, thanks, and thanks for all the work that you do, Dave.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
You as well. Coming up, the snow isn't even on the ground yet, but the Juneau Nordic Ski Team is already recruiting for the next season. How there's helped to make the experience affordable. Here's Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. While a bird's eye view lets a migratory songbird like this European robin keep track of important landmarks along its route, a special protein in its eyes might let it see Earth's magnetic field. It's like a hiker using a compass to find true north. As European robins get closer to migration, their eyes produce more of a light-detecting protein called a cryptochrome. Non-migratory birds have this eye protein, too, but at lower levels. To understand why migratory birds might need more of this protein, scientists compared the cryptochrome proteins from European robins, birds that do migrate, to those from chickens and pigeons, birds that don't migrate. They found that only the robin's cryptochrome changed its behavior in the presence of a weak magnetic field. This feature could make the bird's field of view appear darker in the direction of a magnetic field line, letting them visualize which way is north. Pigeons do have a magnetic mineral called magnetite embedded in their beaks. So even though they may not be able to see magnetic fields, they can detect them. This is what makes homing pigeons so good at finding their way back home. Birds on the move may use one or both ways of sensing magnetic fields. For Bird Note, I'm Mark Bramhill.
You're listening to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. The trees cling to every leaf, but the smell of winter weather is in the air. And the Juneau Nordic Ski Team is getting ready to embrace a new season. They've begun to recruit new members, and we have quite a crew here to tell us about that. So, first of all, welcome to the show, Coach Tristan Knutson-Lombardo. Hi, Tristan.
Hi, Shelley. Thanks for having us.
Sure thing. And we have three skiers here with us. Riley Soboloff. Hi, Riley.
Hi.
And Zoe Lessard. Hi, Zoe.
Hi.
And Eric Thompson. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
You're all here today to promote registration for the team's 2021-22 season. Tristan, let's start with you. Tell us about how the teams are organized and what practice and competition is going to look like this season.
The Juno Nordic Ski Team, it's a program of the Juno Nordic Ski Club, actually, the local Nordic or cross-country ski club here in town. And this year, we're going to have three youth programs. We have our high school team, our middle school team, and then we have what we call our Junior Nordic. It's geared towards kind of elementary age skiers and their families, and that's a Sunday program that doesn't start until January, actually. So we're kind of in the big push right now. Actually, registration just opened today for our middle and high school race teams. And those two programs, our high school team, those practices start the 1st of November. And then our middle school team, those practices start November 30th. Snow or no snow, we get going regardless.
Great to hear. Thank you so much for that overview. Now let's hear about the experiences from some of the skiers themselves that were on the team last year. Riley, beginning with you, tell me how you got into Nordic skiing and what made you join the team?
I started Nordic skiing last year. I was a sixth grader at the time, and I think my mom got an email from the school about it. And yeah, I had a really fun time doing it and enjoyed every part of it.
And Zoe, how about you? How did being a part of the ski team help you get better at skiing? And what's important about being a strong cross-country skier?
Well, the ski team, I learned from my dad and my mom, and they're no professional skier, no offense. But they had like different games and things that are super annoying, but they do test your skill and work on it. So yeah.
And so what's important to you about being a strong cross-country skier, Zoe?
Well, I joined the team to be with Riley, and it now is so much more than that. It's a really great community, and I think that having that community is important.
And Eric, over to you. What do you love about Nordic skiing?
Mainly just the fact to get out of the house, just mainly get out there. I find it's really fun skiing where we do, because like going skiing on the lake and stuff going around there, it's really fun just with all of your friends and everyone there.
What was your favorite part about being on the Juno Nordic ski team?
Going up to Eagle Crest, because I loved that hiking up there and skiing down sometimes on the cross country skis, which was very scary, but it was pretty fun.
Riley, what were some of the highlights of the last ski team season for you?
I loved playing with my friends and doing fun things like that, but also it was such a fun workout to be able to do because you got a lot of exercise. You were in nature. And you got to play, enjoy your time with other people. And yeah, I just enjoyed basically every part. Yeah.
Zoe, what are some of your favorite courses to ski around Juno or even outside of Juno?
I haven't skied much outside of Juno, but I really like the Montana Creek course. It does have a downhill, but other than that, it's pretty flat and fun. So yeah,
it actually starts off with that downhill, right? You just zoom on down. Eric, we know that skiing is great for the physical health. Some of you and some of your friends have mentioned what a good workout it is, but do you think it helps maintain good mental health as well?
For sure, because I feel like the community like really keeps everyone in the activity, keeps everyone engaged, everyone in an upbeat attitude. So, yeah.
Riley, back over to you. I know that going to school in a pandemic has been a big challenge for everyone, students, teachers. Did skiing help you offset some of that social isolation that we've all been experiencing?
Well, so it was extra COVID safe because you wore masks most of the time, unless you were far enough apart from everyone. But it was also so fun to see other people and not to be stuck at your house all day with just like maybe a goldfish or something. But it was so fun to play with everyone and have such a fun experience.
I've heard of pandemic puppies, but no pandemic goldfish, although that definitely makes sense. I know Riley just sort of touched on that, but Zoe, what were some of the ways that the Juno Nordic ski team makes certain that it's a COVID safe environment?
Well, even during practice, they made us wear masks, which was hard because you were exercising and wearing a mask, but they were very COVID safe, and the skis basically provided a 6-foot distance from everybody because you couldn't really be next to somebody with skis on. I think it was very COVID safe.
Yeah, that's a good point with the skis being a natural distance marker. And Eric, what would you say to someone who is thinking about joining the team, but maybe not sure if they have the right gear or enough experience, or maybe they don't have the confidence in their physical ability?
I'd just say try and show up, see what it's about, see if it's right for you. If you don't enjoy it that much, that's fine. You can go somewhere else, but it's always a good idea to try.
Riley or Zoe, what would you say to that question? What would you say to someone who's thinking about joining but maybe has some doubts about whatever reasons?
Well, I know people of all levels of ski, even if you've never skied before, have joined the club and they've had a blast. You make friends no matter what level of skiing you're at, and there are races, but they're rare and they're not mandatory, and it's not very competitive, so I think it's a good environment to learn how to ski.
Excellent answers, all of you. Tristan, what a great group you have to work with. Tell us how we can find out more, or if someone's become really interested, how to join the team.
Well, I first just have to say, Shelly, I love your questions, and I love hearing Riley, Zoe, and Eric, your answers, because I think it speaks just so much to our program and what skiing together can do for each other. It's one thing to go out there by yourself and do it, but in our climate where we never know if it's going to be 0 degrees or raining in 38, it's just so much fun to get out on our trails and explore our trails in a group together. And I really also want to emphasize what I think it was Riley or Zoe said, that you don't have to have any ski experience to join one of our teams. We just want you to have a desire to get better at skiing or learn to ski. We'll do the rest. We'll help outfit you. We'll help you figure it out. We'll teach you. It's really open to skiers of all abilities and experiences. And if this sounds like, if you're in high school or middle school and you like the sound of this program, if you're a parent and you think, gosh, my child would really benefit or fit in here, there's more information on the Juno Nordic Ski Club website, which is jnski.org. And you can click on youth programs, and there's a little program description for our high school and middle school teams and our elementary program. And there's a link to register. There's our contact information. If people, we absolutely as coaches want to make ourselves available to answer questions and help families figure it out. It really takes a village and a community to pull off a program like this. And we have dozens of volunteer coaches that come in, and we have a lot of parents that help, whether it's figuring out carpooling of skiers or gear to and from practice so that we make sure that everybody can attend, and trying to remove as many of those transportation barriers as possible. The one other thing I want to add quickly is that what's really important to us is that our program is available to everyone, no matter ability to pay. So we have a sliding fee scale. And so it's kind of like pay what you can afford based on the information we give you. And there's no questions asked, no judgment. We just really want young people that want to ski or learn to ski, we want them to join our program, and we, you know, we'll do the fundraising and the grant writing, either together or on the side, but we really want to make sure everyone has a chance to join our teams, that's interested.
That's great. I'm glad that you mentioned that. I'm glad that it is so open and accessible to anyone who wants to ski. Well, thank you all for being here today. And Tristan, before we say goodbye, I was wondering if there's just any other opportunities from the ski team or the Juneau Nordic Ski Club that you want to mention while you're here today.
One quick thing is we have lots of volunteer trail work opportunities happening this fall. And our first one is going to be pulling alders out at the end of the North Douglas Pioneer Road. That'll be October 3rd, I believe. It's a Sunday, the first Sunday in October. So bring your lower back strength and your bicep and tricep strength, and we're going to try to get all the alders off the road so that we can groom it when the snow flies.
Hmm. I didn't realize they were overgrowing the road back there. So thanks for the tip on that, if anyone feels like doing a little manual labor for the ski club, the Nordic Ski Club. Thanks again, everybody, for being here today. I really appreciate the conversation. Those are great answers to my questions, Riley, Zoe, and Eric. And Tristan, thanks for being a good coach and doing what you do.
Thanks, Shelley.
Thank you.
Yeah. Here's hoping for a snowy fall and winter.